Moving to a little bit bigger scale, I'm going to talk about watershed scale, and we were looking at nitrogen and phosphorus transport in an urban watershed. My outline is really quick, and we'll talk about background, study site, methodology, results, and summary and conclusions. Just looking at nutrient losses, we all are familiar that nutrient losses from land to water leads to nutrient enrichment of water bodies, which causes eutrophication and algal blooms, which in turn leads to low dissolved oxygen and in extreme cases, fish kills. And more than we know that more than 90% of the rivers in the U.S. are either impaired with nitrogen and phosphorus. The cost of eutrophication is estimated to be a little over $2 billion per year. Unfortunately, despite the many efforts that have been going on over the last few years, the nutrient loss transport pathways from watersheds are very poorly understood. And I think that's one reason why we don't have a good handle on non-point source pollution. Algal blooms in Florida are very common. If you're from Florida, you know that. Often one of the algal blooms is called red tides, and the organisms that is responsible for this algal bloom is called Karenia brevis. This is a long-term data from one of the study, and you see these different colors. Closer you go to the coast, the oranges and reds means the concentrations of these organisms is more than 100,000 cells per liter that has the potential to cause dense algal blooms and fish kills. And as a comparison, if you go 5 kilometers away in the Gulf, the concentrations are around 20-fold less. And as we're beginning to understand more, it's unclear what causes these algal blooms, but you can guess that if they have a high density close to the coast, they might be related to the nutrient transport from land to water. So what we really wanted to do was look at the long-term data set on nitrogen and phosphorus farms in one of the watersheds. This is a Tampa Bay area. That's Sarasota. In the Tampa Bay watershed, we have 5 rivers that drain into the watershed. And our study site, we chose Alafaya River because this watershed has a long-term data available. And you can see this watershed also has a history of algal blooms. Around 1.6 million people live in the watershed, drainage area around 1,100 square kilometer, and nitrogen is a limiting nutrient, as you see in mostly in the marine ecosystems. We have, and many areas in the Tampa Bay are actually heavily mined, and this is also a phosphate mining watershed, as you will see in the next slide. So looking at the land use change over the last 30 years, in 1990s, we had around 10% residential area, so it was quite a built-up at that time, too. Agriculture around 8, and notice that the mined area in the watershed is around 33%. Most of the mined areas which were under excavation or under mining interests were from 1970 to 1980, and that's the reason it had higher area under mined land, and pastures and forests. So over the next 20 or 30 years, the residential area has gone up a little bit more, and it's shown by the yellow colors, and you can see the reds are the agricultural area, and this purple is the mining watershed. So what we did was we were fortunate to have water quality data collected by an agency over the last 18 years or so. So we went back into the watershed and tried to see where those data points are coming from. And we had 3 sites on the main stem, which are shown as black circles. We had 12 sub-basins, which we say 18 to 24% residential area. And these are the reds. And the undeveloped were those that had less than 11% residential area. And also note the composition of other land users in these sub-basins. So looking at the first objective, nitrogen transport, these are the box plots of monthly data for 19 years. And in the state of Florida, we're also going through the EPA proposed total N value. So what I tried to do was put that value so we can see where the levels are in the watershed. Again, the same plot. Those are the main stem stations for which we had data, and these are the dwelled and undwelled sub-basins. So looking at the watershed outlet, that's where we have data for most watersheds in the U.S. It seems like these are the median values in the middle. Around 40% samples had higher values than the threshold value criteria. And look, when we looked into the dwelled sub-basins, we saw tremendous variability. So we have an idea why it is. And one of the major factor also is the sub-basin size. For example, this is the smallest sub-basin. And the research shows that when the watershed is longer, then it takes longer for water to get to that point. So that means if that watershed area is big, as is in North Prong, there are more opportunities for nitrogen to either get retained or denitrification even. And we think that, and also the associated land uses also have a dramatic effect. But in summary, the undeveloped sub-basins had lower concentrations than the others. When we split this data into the nitrate and organic nitrogen, we saw similar results for nitrate, which increases in dwelt, which shouldn't be surprised because we are using inputs. And in undwelt, we had lower values. What was interesting was organic N, and we know so little about organic nitrogen. And we saw the concentrations were very similar across all the sub-basins, and even in the undwelled and even in the dwelt, we had actually quite a few concentrations. So when you try to express them on percent of total N basis, you see that this had the lowest nitrate. So the organic nitrogen was around 60% to 80% in this case, and in this case of the urban or dwelt areas, we had around 25% to 40%, quite a substantial input. Ammonium nitrogen was very similar and less than 0.1 milligram in all the sub-basins. In Florida, we also have what we call a hurricane season, and that's when we get most of the rainfall from June to September. So we grouped this data. These are the main values of those 18 dry or wet seasons. And with nitrate, we saw a decrease in wet season, which we know is probably because of dilution. We have more water coming in the wet season than in the dry season. The groundwater is also a significant contributor, and this ties back with what Amy was saying with nitrogen. I think we know so little about leaching in Florida in general. And if you look at organic nitrogen, actually increases in the wet season, and we have a couple ideas why it is increasing, and when we have more runoff, we also have substantial plant material. With the Florida season, everything grows so fast, and we think it's probably due to some of the leaves that get transported when it rains more. And again, with ammonium nitrogen, we didn't see any trend as concentrations were very low. So when we looked at the long-term trends, these are the monthly concentration data. We saw that there was an increase of 1% per year, which translates to around 0.34 milligrams over this 19 years period. And it shouldn't be surprising, as the watershed is urbanizing, there are more inputs. So this has implications on how to reduce the nitrogen concentrations in the watersheds. Then that ties back to go back into the watershed, look into the soils, and runoff, especially, and even leaching, it could be quite significant in our area. Switching gears, moving to the phosphorus transport, it's the same plot, the same sub-basins. The EPA threshold value, proposed threshold value, is around 0.79 for Tampa Bay streams. All the sub-basins had higher concentrations except one undwelled. Now, phosphorus is more tricky than nitrogen, and we think it's the higher concentrations and the variability is related to the point source inputs. For example, in North Prong, around 20% area is actively mined, and there is also a wastewater treatment input. In English Creek, we have a one wastewater treatment plant. In the Turkey Creek, we don't have. Most of the mined area is already reclaimed. There are no wastewater treatment inputs. And same goes with the South Prong, which also has around more than 60% area mined or reclaimed. So phosphorus is a quite different story. And when you try to look the land use impacts, it seems that the other factors actually supersede the land use component. Okay, looking at the seasonal variability, again, the wet season, June to September, 4 months, the concentrations were higher. If you recall that with nitrogen, they were lower, and that's because the transport pathways for both nutrients are different. When it rains more, the phosphorus can be released from sediments, or it could be related with another construction sediment runoff. So when we split this data into the dissolved director P, which is also the soluble P, and with this data, more than 80% of the phosphorus in all the sub-basins was as DRP, now, which is quite different than what you see in agricultural watersheds, where it's usually the other phosphorus farms are particulate, and we saw the same trend with increase. Similar issues with variability within the sub-basins, that has to do with other land uses as well as the phosphate mining and wastewater treatment input. Now, the good news with the phosphorus trends is, as this watershed is healing from highly phosphate mining activities, the phosphorus levels are actually going down, and about 0.4% or 0.3% decrease over 19 years. So there's a hope that if we can construct in the next 30 years, we might have low, or it might be the different case if we keep applying, or we don't do much with what's already going on. Okay, so with regard to conclusions, the total NN phosphorus concentrations were greater than the EPA proposed values, and that has implications on what can we really do to reduce these levels. Total N and nitrate were also greater in the 12 sub-basins. Organic nitrogen was much greater, and we also have a new data which we collected at weekly intervals over the last one wet season, which actually points out to tells us more about the nitrogen, organic nitrogen, as we separated that into dissolved organic nitrogen and particulate organic nitrogen. And the phosphorus transport had to do more with the phosphorus-rich geology, the mining lands, and the wastewater treatment plants. Looking at the nitrogen, the concentrations were diluted in the wet season because of high rainfall. But this increased the transport of organic and from organic materials. Phosphorus was higher in the wet season because of dissolution, probably suspension of stream sediments. And so the question that we were trying to get with this data was, does urbanization increase or decrease? And it seems that with total N, there was an increase, and likely because of more inputs. And with phosphorus, it has to do more with the regulations that we have. And over the years, the point source inputs has been decreasing. We still have some room for the wastewater treatment plants and mining lands. So with that, we'll take one question. Okay. Go ahead, Jana.
Well, obviously, EPA is not going to collect your data because you're exceeding their threshold most of the time. You all talk about
We have some data. Tampa Bay Fishery Program actually recently calculated a nitrogen budget. And I'm trying to remember, atmospheric deposition in the Tampa Bay watershed was around 21%. So we have substantial an input from atmospheric. And then this watershed is also close to a power plant, which is not too far. With the nitrogen, it's quite tricky, as you said. Even the nitrogen farm that leaves your yard might not necessarily be the farm that you're going to measure at the outlet point, because it goes through so many other reactions before it gets to that point. We don't have any concrete data on yet, but we are very interested in looking at denitrification. And some of the data that I have seen is that urban lawns, there could be the potential sites for denitrification. So, Amy, do you have anything to add to?